Yet another cut from Captain Dirt and the Skirt, Lyndall Montgomery and Kristen Sweetland. As I mentioned before that musical break, we have guest Joey Desjardins in the studio with us. Hi, Joey.
Hi there.
Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Yeah. I was just saying when I mentioned that our interview was coming up that we had gone to the spaghetti fundraiser in Hawkesbury last Friday. That was sort of organized by the Rotary Club in Hawkesbury, and we're just blown away. It was just a fantastic event.
Yeah, very nice turnout.
Yeah, it was a good turnout, and the spirit in the hall was very, very positive. Everybody was just up and...
Yeah, got to meet a lot of new people and familiar faces with new ones, so it was nice.
Yeah, to raise some funds to help you in your goal of getting on Team Canada, so why don't we just start with that part of the equation and just give us a sort of an update on where you stand with that and what that really means.
Yeah. Well, I've been hand cycling for the past 5 years since my injury in 2009.
Yeah.
And hand cycling has kind of led me to pursue it in a more challenging way. And it's kind of progressed along the years. Last year, I started competing across Ontario and Quebec. And that's when I got in my head that, you know, I want to try and make this team, Team Canada. I saw the big boys kind of riding a lot faster than I was. So, you know, that's how I got involved with that. And I got myself a new hand cycle.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah, recently. Well, I'd say in late September of last year.
Okay.
And that now with that bike, I can actually compare with the other guys.
I actually noticed that when, let me see now, was it the Ottawa Citizen that was posted on your Facebook page? It was first, second, and third, right? And
yeah.
the other guys that were second and third to your first, I saw a real similarity in the rigs that they were running, right? So
yes.
I guess this is a...
Now, those two guys have been beating me all season.
Oh, is that right?
So that was my first race with the new bike, and I showed them what I was like on a new bike.
Okay.
So that's why that one was... that's what that one meant to me.
Okay,
really, there's an underlying thing going around in that one.
I can tell by the way you're holding up your one finger that this was really special for you, yeah?
Yeah.
So it makes a difference to have the rig and the right equipment, obviously, but this is a sport. Of heart, right? This is a real,
it's as competitive as any other sport.
I can see that.
And when you actually go out there and you see us race around, you realize that, you know, there's nothing disabled about us, and it's all out.
Yeah.
And you got to train to be fast. Yeah. And it's
I was telling you before the interview that I went online and looked at some of the videos, some of them that you had posted on your Facebook page, and I was just blown away by the the details operating the bikes for one thing, just switching gears and all that, but it's very complex. But the people as well. I was surprised. I guess I just assumed that you would sort of be alternating the.
I think everyone assumed that. Yeah.
So when you see that you're doing both hands are in sync, I guess that means that you can actually pull with your whole body more.
Yeah, pull with your whole body, and there's two things that does is saves your shoulders because you're pushing at the same time, you're pulling at the same time.
Right.
And the other one is for stability. A lot of us don't have that core strength. And when you're pushing, pulling on both sides, you're kind of twisting all the time.
Or wobbling a little bit like that.
Yeah, that's
okay.
It. So that way you're stable and you're even pedal stroke.
Oh, yeah. So a lot of thought has gone into this to make it
the
best sport it can be.
Yeah, yes, it has.
And those wheels on your new rig, are they carbide or?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Yeah, they weigh next to nothing. Yeah.
And they're really, really strong.
Yeah,
I could tell. And do they actually tilt like that?
No, they don't. Some people do have camber on their rear wheels if you have a really curvy track.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, everyone runs them with 0 degree canter, meaning they're just perfectly straight.
Okay. And so how do you steer?
You steer with the front wheel where your legs are positioned on.
Yeah.
And it kind of rocks back and forth. I can describe it like that.
Oh, so it does tilt a little bit.
It does.
Okay.
Now, it takes you like, I'd say, a 6-point turn to turn around on the road.
Okay.
So you need a long, you know, a good circumference to actually make
a full
turn.
So the turning radius is really for when you're going full speed kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
So, It's unique. It's a unique
sport.
Bike.
How long has it been around, hand cycling?
I believe since 1992.
Really?
It's been in the Paralympics.
Really? Okay.
So it's been around. Myself, go back 2 years, I didn't even know. And I was like, this sport needs to be in the Paralympics. Right? And then that's when I was already getting interested in it then.
Yeah.
And that's when I started realizing that there's actually a Canadian team. There's actually get people on the team. They actually go to the Paralympics. So that's what kind of built slowly along the way. The more I found out, the more I got interested.
The more it became your goal.
Yes, that's it. I was like, I want to make that team. Yeah.
For you. Yeah. So it is one of the official sports in the Paralympics?
It is, okay. Yep.
And obviously, as you said, you have to work your way up through the various national competitions to be even considered.
Yes.
For Team Canada.
So I'll describe a little bit more. Yeah. Now I'm a UCI athlete. You have to register with the Union Cyclisme Internationale to race these the races to make to qualify for Team Canada.
Okay.
And development standard right now to get to be an athlete on the team is average 35 kilometers an hour for 15 kilometer time trial.
Yes.
So that's what I'm aiming for, right? The number one guy right now is averaging just under 40.
I saw that in Teresa's
39
story.
39.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So.
And that's not peak speed. That's an average speed.
Average speed. Yeah.
Can you maintain that over a truck course.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
And they don't lower their average too much. I'd say a couple kilometers on a full 45 kilometer road race.
Oh man.
So these guys are pushing that the whole time.
So they're going well over that if they're going to get an average of 45.
They are. 40,
They're going way over that. That's incredible. But you just see the determination of their face, and I see exactly that look in your face when the photographs and stuff. It's really. Quite amazing. So it gets your adrenaline pumping.
Oh, it does. Yeah. It gets your heart rate right up there. Eh? Yeah.
So what kind of fitness program do you have to do to I guess, especially in the wintertime when you can't get out on the street with your bike, do you have to do
weights and stuff? Yep. I stopped working out last season around November, took November off, and then started in December again. Yeah. And December started about 4 days a week with mostly weight training. With a little bit on the hand cycle.
Yeah.
And then as January came, and then February, now I'm up to 5 days a week.
Wow.
Four of those days are on the hand cycle intervals, and they vary. And then my one day is weights. So it's kind of progressed throughout the winter.
Yeah.
To be more hand cycle specific. And then...
I guess that's like any athlete, you want to train that set of muscles especially. And I've heard that like weight training... It can be overdone, right? I mean, you don't want to build up the muscles that are not
Not needed, but you also have to maintain, the other side of the muscles you're not using when you're hand cycling so that you become stronger.
So do you have a coach working with you on this?
I do right now. Yeah. I have the program director for Cycling Canada took me on.
Good for you.
So he used to race competitively in Europe.
What's his name?
Arnaud Litou.
Okay.
And
the French love this.
Yeah. So he I was looking for someone to bridge the gap because I'm looking to make development athlete on the team, and so he kind of offered me this, which is he's got a full schedule, but so he's kind of coaching me to get he's doing my interval plan, my workout routine, and so hopefully that bridges the gap, and then I can make the team this way. But
excellent. Wow. Sounds like you're on track.
Yeah, things are lining up. And
And what competitions have you got coming up?
So I've got the three important ones come May 1st, 2nd, 3rd.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
holy
so 2 weeks away. Yeah, the May 1st will be a 45-kilometer road race.
Where
May
2nd. Where's that?
Gilles Villeneuve racetrack, the F1 track in Montreal.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah, we get to race on that racetrack.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes. So it's closed circuit, and you just it's 4.4-kilometer laps. And so... That's it. That's
nice.
Exciting.
A nice protected environment there too. Obviously,
a little windy.
Yeah,
it's on the side of the water there. But
cool. Excellent. Yeah. So that's are they all taking place there?
The three of them. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back to back to back.
Back to back to back.
Man.
Yeah.
And are they heats and like eliminations or like do you just?
No. They're all UCI sanctioned, so they actually given points out. For completing the race.
Oh, I see.
So it attracts in a lot more athletes from the States and all around who want to get their UCI points.
Oh, yeah.
Because all the other ones, you have to go to Europe to get.
Okay.
So these are the only ones here in North America that you can get.
And lucky you, it's just an
it's
hour
It's an hour away. Some people have to drive a long drive to go there. So.
Now, have you had the opportunity to go down and practice on that track at all?
I got invited to a training camp.
Is that right?
Yep. So the 26th to the 29th of April.
Of April, this month.
I get to run around the track with a couple guys.
Hometown advantage.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
That's excellent. Oh, well, we wish you good luck on that.
Thank you.
I'm sure you'll do well. Yeah, that's quite exciting. And then what happens from there? What's your next? I know you. I can see in your eyes. You don't even want to think beyond that. You're so focused.
It's like that race. It's like one race. So, I've got about, I'd say, a dozen races planned out for this summer.
Yeah.
That one being more important, and the nationals as well come at the end of June.
So I'm not quite clear. I had said national races earlier, but the UCI is international, right?
Yes, it is. So yeah, that's an international one.
Okay.
Come beginning of May.
Okay, so you have to maintain a standing both nationally and internationally
to
want to qualify. Wow,
yes,
that's really complex. So would you do some races out of country?
Well, I have this past January. I went out to Florida and did two races.
Oh, is that right?
One of the biggest races in North America in terms of volume was held in Melbourne, Florida.
Okay.
82 participants, wow. Hand cycles.
You're kidding.
I had never seen that before. Because usually our races are around 30,
yeah. Right?
For the people, the talent they bring in.
Okay.
That one had 82. That was
a
pack. And you actually got to work with, I'd say, 7-8 different people at a time that would kind of group together and then kind of feed off each other and get some speed and try to catch up or lose one another.
Oh, but
that was an interesting one.
And what size of course was that on?
That was a 42-kilometer road race.
Is that pretty standard?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
42 kilometers.
Yeah. 42, 45. They usually play around that.
So that gives you lots of time to develop strategies and, as you say, coalitions.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's hard to talk at that pace that you're going, but you kind of have to initiate sometimes. Say, hey, let's work, you know?
Yeah.
Just say a few words and then the other guy who's pulling you will actually drop back and let you pull, is what you call it when you go up front.
So you're sort of airstreaming or something like that?
Yes, we are. Yeah, definitely are. Okay. Yeah.
I can remember doing that behind transport trucks.
Yeah, so trying to save some fuel, eh? Yeah. I don't know if that works at all, but yeah.
Save a bit of energy
and
take turns doing it for each other, that kind of thing. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, and how about over, like, into Europe?
Might be one that I'm able to go to in Germany end of July, but that's still to be, I still need, so that's up ahead, you know?
Yeah,
I
understand.
But
first, it depends on first, your standing.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you got your priorities.
Told about that might be one that I'm a contender to go as a development athlete if it comes to that.
Okay, very cool. Okay, well, listen, Joey, I think we're going to take a break here. I'm going to play another one of my favorite cuts of music from Lyndall Montgomery and Captain Dirt in the Skirt. And when we come back, we're going to get a little bit more into hand cycling and what your plans are for the future. Pensive piece by Lyndall Montgomery from her CD, Captain Dirt in the Skirt. Now we're back with Joey Desjardins. Thanks again, Joey, for coming in.
My pleasure.
We were just talking about the cost of your cycle. Is that something you're willing to divulge, or is this sort of a trade secret?
Now, these things range from, I'd say, $5,000 to upwards of $20,000.
Sky's the limit.
Yes, yeah. Now, I was very fortunate to have a very generous person, Jean Fairfield, here in Hawkesbury.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Fairfield, actually. And I had a conversation with him at the grocery store, and I said, you know, I'm racing, but I have a handicap. It's not me, it's my hand cycle. So he really took that.
Yeah.
And a few weeks later, he came back to me and he showed me a picture of the best bike on the market. And he says, I have half the money for this already.
Wow.
So Jean got 18 people to donate $1,000 each for me to get this new hand cycle. And that's how I have this really nice hand cycle.
What a great story. That's fantastic.
So you can imagine how much that equals up to.
18,000?
No, that was everyone together.
Okay, okay.
Vanessa and I each put in $1,000 again.
Okay.
So it came out to $20,000, that bike.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there's technology integrated in the bike as well.
Yes.
Meaning when I push the pedals, it shows kind of a how strong you are shows on a number.
Oh, is that right?
So you can train off that.
It's monitoring you
all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's that's
onboard computer kind of thing.
Onboard computer, yeah, built in the crank. So right. It's kind of measures your watts, which is a cycling term.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Watts is a unit of power, of energy, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that's how much the hand cycle costs. So that's
But interesting, eh? That you had sort of like so quickly, less than 2 years, you had sort of reached you hit a ceiling with the cycle that you were using, and you
yes,
sort of
that was my that's my baby, that cycle. It's at home, and I don't think I could ever get rid of it because of the experiences I've had on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. My first sense of independence again after my injury was on that hand cycle.
Yeah.
And traveling across Canada on that hand cycle. That was a
fantastic memories,
yeah.
Eh?
Yeah.
With that bike. So you're not going to give that one up.
No.
But you took it as far as it would
go. Took it as far as I could go. I got laughed at a little bit. You know, the guys, like, was sitting so straight up that not aerodynamic at all.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And actually, one guy called me like a car door. You know, when you open the door when you're driving down the road? Yeah. That's basically the reference they gave me. So I said, okay, I think it's time for me to start looking at something a little bit more competitive.
That's something I wanted to ask you. In your more recent bike, obviously, you're lying almost prone, right? I mean, you're really, really flat. Yep. So how is your vision at that angle?
Well, regulation says that your eyes need to clear the crank, okay. Which doesn't give you much vision at all. But that's how you're cutting the wind the most. So
yeah.
You have to tilt your head to the left. Because that's where the best line of vision is.
Okay.
And then you look.
You're looking around the crank?
Yeah, looking around the crank and the wheel.
Okay.
When you're following someone directly behind him, your field of vision sees it automatically.
Yeah, okay.
Sees his hand cycle and sees what's going on.
Right.
But
you're relying on your peripheral vision kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And okay. Much goes again when you're not following anyone. It's peripheral vision, but if there's a pothole, if there's a, you know, something, a debris, you always have to tilt your head here and there and see what's going on.
You could really be caught by surprise with the pothole and that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. You have. Especially when you're following someone and then you don't see nothing up ahead.
Oh,
and
yeah,
then, and he doesn't clearly see it, then the whole line of people gets stuck in that rhythm there. But
and the bikes are strong enough to withstand that kind of...
Yes, they are, yeah.
Do they have a suspension?
No, they don't have suspension for, I think for torque reasons, for power.
Oh, yeah.
It will flex less. Right, the guys try to get it as stiff as possible, but again, they do flex.
Well, that was a question that somebody actually sent in by text, so I thought we would ask that question. How much was your cycle? And what ways do we have to lend support to you? If people are inspired by what you're up to and want to line up behind Joey Desjardins and say, I want a piece of what he's doing, what's a good way for somebody to lend a helping hand or a helping dollar?
Well, they can either, if you know me personally, you come tell me what you're interested in. But the Rotary Club has been a big help in that terms. Mm-hmm. And if you know a Rotarian or you get a hold of one, that's kind of the main way of getting
that through. That's an established
channel
for them to gather funds for you.
Yes, yeah, that is.
That's a good suggestion, actually. Yeah. Yeah, and we were just saying during the musical break as well that you have a Facebook page.
Yes, I do.
I found tons of information there about hand cycling and lots of other stuff too. Really great videos and stuff. So just searching your name.
Yeah, either my name or Paracycling Athlete. Right. I have an athlete page under that name.
Okay.
And that's where I post competitions when I'm going.
Right.
Training.
So people can really follow you closely.
Yes. That's the way to do it.
Paracycling
Athlete.
Athlete. Okay, well, you know, Joe, I asked you earlier if we could do this, and you seem to be game. This is a series of seven questions.
Yeah.
From the Rick Hansen Foundation blog, and I was really moved by these questions, and especially the answers that some of the para athletes gave to them. So I thought, with your cooperation, we could
we could tackle some of those.
Okay. So they're just seven really simple questions. So, question number one would be, describe yourself in five words.
Myself in five words, eh?
I wouldn't want to have to do this.
No, this is tough when you have to think about yourself, eh?
Yeah.
I'd say I'm passionate
that shows.
For things that I do. Yeah. I'm caring for others. I'm motivated. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if I have to be motivated to want to get up every day and try to work out and, you know, get your life in order.
Yeah, it takes a certain amount of discipline.
Motivated, self-driven falls underneath that category. You know, that's about four. And you know, loving for the people around me, and people have helped me out throughout my whole life.
Excellent. Excellent. What are you most passionate about?
The most passionate about, you know, helping others, giving back, because of so many people have helped me along the way. Mm. And being able to do, you know, first thing after my injury was injury prevention and actually motivational speaking. And that kind of got me out of my shell, because I used to not say much before this, before my injury. I was a pretty quiet kind of guy.
Interesting.
So this kind of brought me out.
You said before your injury you were
a person. Yes, actually, my Vanessa's mom, my mother-in-law, says, you know what? You lost something, but you gained your voice.
Yeah.
That's something that
quite amazing
came out of me after this.
Yeah. So. If you could change anything in the world, what would it be?
I would say the way people look at someone with a disability.
Hmm.
Yeah, the mentality around that. Yeah.
There's still a stigma there, I think.
Yes, there is. Yep. And that, you know, we're all equal, because before this I was, you know, like everybody else. It doesn't mean I've changed. I'm still the same person.
Yeah, yeah.
And even, you know, even someone with that side of injury at birth, then they're still, you know, they're still a human being.
Yeah.
And I think the way people not look at the disability, but look at the person, I find that would be a big, you know.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite quote?
Oh, my favorite quote. I would say, I have one on my back of my van, but the other one that Rick's always inspired me since my injury, believe in your dreams and anything can happen is a big one, right?
Yeah.
Because even though sometimes people say dreams are unrealistic or not, you know, it's a big thing, a dream of yours, but I think that's a good way to go about it. And
yeah, I get you. I mean, by definition, a dream has to be unrealistic. What the hell is,
that's it, right?
Dreaming a realistic dream. I mean, it doesn't even qualify. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dreams are pretty open-ended. That's nice. Describe a challenge you've overcome.
Challenge I've overcome. Well, you know, my injuries has been a challenge, but I think more so after that are barriers that people face each and every day for mobility issues. When there's no ramp there, how do I get in?
Mm-hmm.
If
there's
an obstacle, how do I get around it, over it, through it? You know,
this
you have to find a way to get through.
This is a daily curse.
Yes, yes, it is, right? Okay. What did I say when the first thing you asked me when I said, can you come in? I said, okay, how do I get in?
Yeah, are you guys accessible?
We think of this more than you could imagine.
It was your first reflex, that's right.
Yeah. Because it's funny how one step can limit us from coming into a place, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, I mentioned to you at the time that Louise was really proud that that was part of her vision for this building, is that she wanted to make it accessible. So she achieved it. Let me see now. If you could remove one barrier, what would it be?
If I could remove a barrier. I would say a barrier. Well, we just kind of touched base on a barrier, right? The mobility and, but...
That's a big one. Well, it bears repeating, you know, because that's a very, I mean, I said daily occurrence. I'm sure it's hour by hour you're having to come up with that kind of thing. Who was it? Jim Watson in Ottawa. Did you hear what he had to say about...
No, I didn't hear.
Well, like he smashed his hip or something on the skidoo, I think. So he was on crutches and was in a wheelchair for part of the time. And he's on the mend, but he's still on crutches. But the whole community in Ottawa said, you should be using the paratranspo system in Ottawa, for one thing. And he said, no, I don't want to take a spot from, you know, from people who need it. But basically, he said, I had no idea the sidewalks in Ottawa were so rough and so hard to...
to actually go around, maneuver?
Yeah. So he got a really good taste of it. And a lot of spokespeople for, you know, for people in, you know, in wheelchairs and with limited mobility really took the opportunity to highlight it and say, come on, pay attention. You
Let's
know?
Fix these things. Yeah, these little problems that actually create big problems.
Yeah. He resisted, you know, making a big commitment. It was right around budget time, you know.
Yeah.
I think he got a firsthand experience with it and it made a difference.
Yeah.
Our last question, number 7 here. What are you most grateful for, Joey?
My life, being able to live the way I do since my injury has been... the biggest thing for me. You know, after your injury, you're so broken down and you're so back to basics that what you're looking to live is the normal life. And I just want to have a family, get married. I was, you know, with my wife and now my wife, and just to, have a house and just grow up.
Yeah.
And that's basically what I'm most grateful for, is to being able to experience these things and to keep experiencing what life is all about.
But in the process, you're living an extraordinary life.
That's it. Yeah. And
quite amazing.
Very grateful for it.
Yeah, good for you. Well, you're sharing that kind of love and appreciation with everywhere you go. It shows on your face, you know. And that was part of what I was saying about last Friday at the Legion, was the whole room was just full of that positive energy, you know.
Yeah, that, felt good in there.
Yeah, it was quite amazing. Well, really appreciate you coming in, Joey. I really
thank you for asking me to do this. Yeah, this is expand my horizon and keep, pushing the little limits for my own.
Yeah.
This is definitely one of them.
Well, likewise for me, it was an education in what your world is like and the challenges that you're dominating.
Yeah.
and the barriers and stuff and just not even think, blinking and moving forward. So really, really inspirational. So, and we will have to have you in another time, do a follow-up on how you do in the
definitely,
races and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'll commit to that.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks again, Joey, for
coming
in.
Thank you.
Okay. Par les temps qui courent, si toutefois tu les vois courir, les soucis de l'amour, si tu peux les voir mourir comme dans une antichambre.